Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. History can sometimes feel like a dry topic. A world made up of men in white wigs and pressed coats making important and dispassionate decisions. In reality, there have always been scandals that have shaped our collective history, including here in Wisconsin. Author Anna Lardinoy writes about many of these defining moments in her new book, Storied and Scandalous Wisconsin, a history of mischief and menace, hero and heartbreak. She joins me now to talk about it. Anna, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Thank you so much for having me. I am delighted to share with you some more wild tales about Wisconsin.
You know, it's interesting when we think about our history, especially as it's taught to us, I think we really play down the salaciousness to focus on, you know, what we consider more serious things. But your book, of course, really digs into these scandalous stories. What was it like for you doing this research?
Well, it was a whole lot of fun. It was absolutely fascinating because not only was I digging through some of our more scandalous history, but I was also able to kind of put into context how we got to where we are now. So I found it really fascinating that Wisconsin was imagined as a dry state, which I find incredibly ironic because today we are one of the most hard drinking states in the nation. So when I was looking at prohibition and immigration and how that all happened, I can see the how the pendulum swung to where we are now. And when you look at these scandalous stories, you can see a lot of that and how we get to the places that we are today.
It was interesting. Of course, the book mentioned the county where I grew up, Walworth County, was a dry county. And of course, now it is not. What were some of those surprising stories that you came across as you were doing this book?
Well, I think that the story that found me was the story of the police chief who was caught in a love triangle that resulted in the murder of his lover. I came across it when I was actually investigating a mob hit from the same era that's in the book, because there's a section on organized crime in Wisconsin. And this case was breaking around the same time. And how I do a lot of my research is just by reading old newspapers. So I continued to see headlines for these stories and they just drew me in. And then when I discovered this love triangle and that this police chief's wife killed his lover with his own revolver and it just got so sordid, it was a story that wanted me to tell it. And so I think that that was one of the more surprising ones. And it's not all morbid. There are some slightly sweet stories, but scandal usually goes along with tragedy.
It does. I mean, one of the stories that really stuck out to me, I think there are going to be few Milwaukeeans who don't know about runaway slave Joshua Glover and his release. The city takes a lot of pride in this story, but one of the people most closely associated with it, at least at the time, was Sherman Booth, who had a major scandal.
It is a horrible story, and it's hard to believe that anything is named in his honor after that, to be perfectly frank. It was one of the most scandalous things that happened in its day. And when you read the transcripts of that trial, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, Sherman Booth is later accused of raping a 14-year-old babysitter. And she is such an innocent that she does not even realize what's happening to her. She just knows that it's a bad thing. And Sherman Booth basically admits that he did this to her father and offers him money to keep it quiet. But the father, even during this era, is livid. And Sherman Booth says, if you publicize this, it's going to be bad for your daughter. And Carolyn Cook's father does not care. He wants to see justice served. And Sherman Booth is right. They make this girl seem terrible. She's accused of wearing short sleeve dresses to school. It's scandalous. And when you are reading through the transcripts, one thing that really struck me is at a time when there is really no sex education. The newspapers are having complicated conversations about things like hymens. So I have to imagine that this scandal also educated the city on a lot of different aspects of sex. At the end of the day, he is never punished for this in the courts, but his wife leaves him. You know, he is persona non grata, and he ends up having to go to Illinois and start his life over again. So he's definitely a scandalous figure. And I actually tell this story sometimes on one of my tours, because we're in Yankee Hill, where a lot of his things happened. But I tell people this in order to kind of make them feel better about our current political situations, just to point out that things have always been kind of terrible. We've been able to overcome it, and we'll be able to overcome this as well.
It must be interesting reading through those newspapers from that time and seeing the story kind of go back and forth because, you know, as you mentioned, Sherman Booth said that this would be very difficult for this young woman. It was very difficult for her, but, you know, things kind of swung both ways. What is it like having that outside perspective, looking at, people really dealing with this situation as it's happening?
Well, it's really fascinating because not only are you looking at it to watch how it plays out, but I can't get away from the fact that I am looking at it through my modern framework. And so my ideas about the things that are happening are often different, and especially because I am a woman. And a lot of these stories involve women being victimized and women doing violent things to try to take back power in their own lives. And so I look at that from a different perspective than it played out in the 1800s. And it's really hard for me to separate those two things. And I think that that plays out a lot in the tone of my pieces, even when I try not to do that, just because it's being filtered through who I am.
You have to come at it with your whole self. You know, you can't, of course, divorce your personhood from your writing. That would be, in some ways, disingenuous.
Well, it's somewhat interesting to me because I was working with a female editor on this. And even though we are both modern women living in this contemporary time, we did look at things differently. And she really took me to task a few times on the way that I presented the tale of the woman who was shot down in Madison in front of a grocery store. I told the story through the framework of that this man was a manipulative murderer. And she said I was being far too harsh on him, that the woman who was killed was leading him on. A lot of people don't realize, especially if you're a smaller writer like me, your editor has a lot of influence in how stories are actually shaped.
Yeah. Now, there were a lot of things that happened here in Milwaukee. There was one event that you mentioned right at the top, a famous event that I'd heard of before, of course, but I hadn't known it was in Milwaukee until I moved here. The attempted assassination of Teddy Roosevelt. For listeners who may not be familiar with it.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt, and this story, is running as a third-party candidate. And he is touring the country in order to support the Bull Moose Party and his own presidency. And this is another story where that social fabric falls apart because at the center of the story is a very mentally ill man who has had dreams that he has been told to kill Roosevelt to prevent him from starting this third party and ruining the country. And he's been following Roosevelt around the country, but Roosevelt just didn't realize it. So they finally meet up here in Milwaukee. And Roosevelt is standing outside waving to a throng of fans. And he is shot in the chest by this man. Well, there are some great historic photos of people diving towards the shooter in the crowd, and they managed to secure him. Roosevelt does get wounded by the bullet. He gives his speech anyway, which he does not condense in any way. He's speaking for nearly an hour. He's bleeding through his the entire time. And part of the fun part of retelling this story is that the thing that really prevents him from dying is that he has his speech folded up in his breast pocket, and it's so thick that plus his glasses case kind of absorb some of this impact from the bullet and help it not to penetrate quite as deeply. But to Roosevelt's dying day, he lived with that bullet in his chest, lodged in a rib. The man who shot him eventually spends the remainder of his days in a psychiatric institution. But now this becomes part of fun Milwaukee lore, and you can actually see the marker where this happened if you go to the downtown Hyatt.
So to take a kind of interesting turn, we so often have you on to talk about the supernatural. And it's, I guess, no surprise that your book includes just a touch of that. And there was a man that became famous for his psychic ability. Tell us a bit about this man, Arthur Price Roberts.
Yes, he is one of my favorite characters in Milwaukee. He is, for a time, one of Milwaukee's most famous citizens, and he's definitely one of the most well-known psychics in the country. Some people even called him the American Sherlock Holmes, because like that character, he would meet people and reveal something unnerving about them, but rather than observation, he claimed that it came from his psychic powers. And he's definitely famous throughout the arc of his life. He is hired by a bank to find out who robbed one of their banks, and he decides to have a seance. And that seance results in a name, and that person is arrested and goes to trial. He is able to find dead bodies just by using the power of his mind. But how he really launches himself into the history of Milwaukee is when he correctly predicts that there's going to be a series of bombings in Milwaukee in 1935. Now, some people know this story, that we had a number of bombings. The Shorewood Village Hall is dynamited. Two First National banks, later on a police substation gets dynamited. And all of this is foretold by Doc Roberts. And he even predicts the way it's all going to end. It is all entirely correct. But if we're looking at it through a modern framework, you can definitely see it's also very vague. But that particular case actually is still used to this day in some circles as evidence that psychic phenomena exists. So fascinating character. And I think one of the most interesting things about him is that his last official prediction was probably his most important. He correctly predicted his own death due to natural causes. Just a little fun fact.
Yeah. It's interesting looking back at these kinds of stories. And for you, who have spent so much of your career digging into the kind of bizarre past of our community especially, what do you think is the benefit of retelling and learning about them?
Well, I think it's multifold. I think just on a basic level, it's extremely entertaining. And I think that it helps us draw parallels between the past and the present, because we see that people are really never altogether that different. So especially in times that we live in now, where people feel like this is the end. No, we've always been like this. These things have always happened. It is part of the human experience. So I think in that sense, it's both entertaining and comforting. But I also think when we look at the events that happened in the past, we better understand the world in which we live in today, because we see the things that happen to create the laws that we live with, to create the social structure that we have agreed to live by. And so I know that that seems like a more serious look at some really entertaining stories. But I think if you're really looking at this type of work as a collection, that's definitely what you get out of it. How do we get to where we are today is always found in the past.
Yeah. Anna, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you so much for having me, Joy. It's always a delight to talk with you.
Anna Lardinoy is a local historian, tour guide, and the author of Storied and Scandalous Wisconsin.